Welcome everybody to episode 8 of the Golden Arrow series, looking back at the BDO World Championship. And I'm delighted to be joined today by the three-time runner-up at the Ladies BDO World Championship, Dita Hedman. How are you, Dita?
I'm fine, thank you. And thanks for reminding me.
You know, I guess you're fresh off, you know, another night shift, or not far removed from one with Royal Mail. What have the last 3 months been like for you as a key worker?
Oh, it's been manic. Absolutely manic is the only way I can describe it. You know, you could hardly move in the mail centre with so much work coming in. You know, at the end of the day, to be honest with you, with this lockdown, as a key worker, as they so put it, it's good to be going out to work than just sitting at home doing nothing. I say doing nothing, to be honest with you, these weekends I've taken to try and tidy the house up. So it's good in one way, and you know, so not so bad in another, but yeah, it's just keep my mind off things anyway. So
I mean, as someone who's, you know, you've traveled more or less every weekend for the last 10 years plus doing the BDO WDF tour, have you missed the darts at the weekend?
Do you know, that's the most strangest of things. I spoke to Paul the other day, and I haven't thrown any darts at all, because it is just like, as much as I love it, my heart and soul is in it, I actually welcome the break, you know, because whenever there's a tournament, I'm thinking, I've got to go to see all the people I haven't seen. And I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it immensely. But it's like everything, sometimes just having that little break kind of refresh you.
Hmm.
You know, even online, I've declined. To be fair, online, I haven't got this set up anyway, so that wasn't such a hardship to decline. But yeah, it's a welcome break just to do something different. As I said, tidy the house up.
I mean, I guess in terms of darts, I know you grew up in Jamaica. What were those first years of your life like there?
Oh, God. It's a total different place, to be honest with you. As a child, I come from a very poor background, to be honest. I mean, people see me as I am and they wouldn't believe it. It's a totally different life. Some of the things that you see, like they'll show in Africa where they carry and have to go and fetch water, food. We were quite self-sufficient anyway. So my life was a little bit like that, but it's like everything, you get used to what you're living in, you know? You know, I have to say, my parents that came to England, I am eternally grateful because they've changed my life for me totally. Again, it's an uncertainty when they come. You don't know whether we would come as well. But as a child, you don't think about those things. You just get on with life, don't you? You don't think that far ahead. It's just growing up and being a kid.
So when was it you actually came over to England?
I was nearly 14. So I was still a teenager, really. Still in my years of arms, well, trying to study. And obviously all my GCSE and all that kind of stuff that you had just all got left behind, because it's the crucial time of your life, really. 14, going on 14 into adulthood, really growing into it. As I said, I just go with life as it comes and as it gets thrown at me. I never really did look that way forward. I just live life as it comes, and I still do today.
And when you came over, I know you're from quite a sporting family, but how did you actually start playing darts?
When I came, because I am one of seven children, I have five brother, one sister. So when I came to England, there was three of us, myself and two other brothers. So the eldest one, when my parents came, they six was left in Jamaica, one was born here. So they brought the eldest one first, because obviously back then you had to be in England before you were 16, otherwise you were an adult and you had to get a working permit, all that kind of stuff that goes back then. So they brought him up so he could go to school. then it was the next two, so they could go to school, and then the last three. So when I came, my brothers were already established, and I used to babysit for one of my brothers, Al Edmund. Mm. He won the British Open back in 1994. And he and my eldest brother used to play darts, so while I used to babysit, I used to have a practice on his board, trying not to put too many holes in his kitchen wall. And then when he came in from playing darts, we would have a game of 3-1, double in, double out. And that's how I started.
And were you driven at that time trying to beat them, or did you just fall in love with it straight away?
Oh, I fell in love with it straight away, and of course, I wanted to beat them, because I would never win a game. And he used to, the saying that if I didn't get off, it used to be called whitewash. So the game went then. And I would never leave until I could win a leg. Until Al used to say, Dieter, you got to go to school in the morning. And then I would go off. Okay, I'll see you tomorrow. And that's how it was, really.
So I guess what was the route then for you from that kind of, you know, your first experiences then to you know, getting to the final of the World Masters in 1990?
Well, obviously from there playing in his kitchen to on a Sunday doing my chores and then going to have a game of darts on a Sunday afternoon while your parents, well, my mum cook and, you know, the usual family get together. And from then, someone say, would you join the darts league? And that's how it went. And I just fell in love with it more and more. And then obviously got a job. And I used to play. I used to really play 7 days a week. I was never off the board. And I just wanted to see how far I could really get. There was no aspiration as to where I was going. I just enjoyed the game. And someone said, there's a competition. And I said, okay, I'll go. And then it just got into my soul, really, and I just wanted to see how far I could get.
I mean, you know, the early part of the 90s, you had, you know, some real success. You won the Europe Cup singles in 94, and you also won the World Masters of that year. What are your memories of those competitions?
You know, they were good times. There was none of this bitchiness and all that stuff that goes with the game now. They were just good times. You know, when you turn up for a competition, we had such fun, we had such laugh, that you're always nice and relaxed and never really think about the game. We were there to play, but we were there to have fun as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was. And I just went about just playing and hopefully get to the final and win. And yeah, you know, even to this day, I'm still really kind of the same. I go to a tournament, but I don't know what will turn up. You just hope you play well. And I think that's what most players do. You turn up to a competition, you hope to play well.
I mean, you won the World Masters again in 2013. How different was it to win it, you know, sort of almost 20 years on from when you picked it up the first time?
Oh, my God. Coming back. Oh, it's hard to really describe. I'm just like thinking, God, did I do it then? And then when I came back and I did it again, I just thought, wow, that was all I did. I just thought, wow. And obviously, they start quoting history and stuff like that. And because I was never one for all history, I said, I just live the day as it comes and goes, and I just go about my business. But I found the camaraderie was still okay, but it was more intense. I mean, back then we would just, as I said, we would just all turn up, play, have fun and just enjoy the game. You know, nobody was backbiting, no one was in your ears while you were playing. It's taken a different perspective now, I think. Back then, when you were friends, you were friends. When you were on the hockey, it was total respect. Whereas now, you think someone is your friend and you're playing someone else and they'll be openly shouting against that person in your head, you think, what the hell is this all about? You know? Whereas back then, even if you didn't like the person, you didn't really say much, but it's a crazy world how it is now on the hockey. I just find now it's not about sportsmanship, it's just what you can do to win the game.
It's an interesting perspective. Something I did want to, you know, ask you a little bit more about. I know you sort of, you've taken a couple of breaks from the sport, but you know, the first one was sort of 1997 for about, you know, 4 or 5 years. What was the thinking at the time for you walking away?
Well, I fell out of love with the game, because I will always remember 1997, because I was playing for England and I actually got picked to represent England in the World Cup in Australia. And also my job, I also got made redundant. So it was a combination of a lot of things. And I remember sending a letter to Holly, who's no longer with us, to say my heart is not in the game and I wouldn't be representing England in the way that I would like to represent England. So hopefully, you know, it will come back. But I just needed a break. I just felt at the time with job and everything, and obviously my trying to find another job was the utmost on my mind. So I didn't think I could go out there represent my country with so much going on anyway, as well as I said, I'd fallen out of love with it.
Hmm.
And lucky for me, I did find this job that I'm in now and still is at the post office, which is a fantastic job. At the time, I never even really, once I packed up, it was never in my thought. I kind of, if I'm doing something, I totally focus on that. I don't like distraction. I just need to focus on that. Once that's right, then I will pick up where I left off, if I can.
Mm.
And yeah.
What was the, you know, how did you find the love to be playing again when you came back? Because, you know, when you did come back, the women's side was starting to get a lot more exposure with the BDO, with the start of the Ladies World Championship, but you were forging a different path and playing in the PDC events.
Yes, because as you know, Colin Lloyd was my partner at the time. And that was him who got me back into the game, to be honest with you. When they had the first Las Vegas Desert Classic, and he said to me, "Are you coming?" And I said, "Never been to America." "Yeah, would love it." And he said, "The tournament." And he said, "The prize fund." And I said, "Well, Colin, I haven't thrown a dart for how many years?" I said, "I don't even know where they are anyway. I know where they are." I went, "Okay." So we did a few tournaments first before I went there. And to be honest with you, I needed a new kitchen. I didn't think, would I win it? But I just thought, well, if I get far enough, because obviously where I'd practice, I knew the game was still there. When we went there and I won it, I bought a new kitchen with the money, so that was fantastic. So that's how I came back into playing again, to be honest with you.
And what were those years like on the PDC? What, you know, how did that experience shape you as a dart player, you know, playing against the men far more regularly?
That was absolutely fantastic. It builds you. It builds your backbone, because, and it's a different mindset. Because when you play against a man, there's no expectation on your part. So I find I was like more relaxed, and I enjoyed it so much because the crowd was just there, and I knew the men was always under more pressure than I am, because even now, even what Fallon's done, Lisa's done, Anna, myself, there is still that stigma of, I can't lose to a woman.
Mm.
It is still there. I don't care what anybody says. It is still there, no matter how good you are. And playing on the PDC side is just, I just love to beat them and listen to the ribbing that they get later. I will tell you an episode. Who was it? Steve Mace. I remember playing him over in Ireland and beating him, and he went and threw his darts away. They were one of the funny stories. And then he had to try and find them because he had to play the next day. But they were fun times, you know. And I think that's why I played so well, because there was no expectation at all.
I mean, certainly you mentioned Fallon there, and obviously what she achieved at the end of last year, obviously, you know, opened a lot of eyes. But, you know, back in 2005 at the UK Open, you know, you beat Aaron Turner and Norma Fletcher.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that experience like? And obviously, the, you know, there were eyes on you at the time because of what you'd achieved.
Do you know, I think back now and I thought, not really. It is in history as the first woman to have beaten a man on TV, but that was it really. I had my interview with Ellen Chamberlain back then, had fun, and that was it. There was no big ooh-ah or anything about it. Because I remember an episode where Anna was in the PDC and she won a game on TV as well, didn't she?
Yeah.
Trying to think what his name was.
Vincent Van der Voort.
Vincent Van der Voort, that's it. And at the time, they were trying to say Hannah was the first woman to have beaten a man on TV. And someone went, I think you're wrong. Dieter Edman was. So they had to change it. Hannah was the first woman to have beaten a man in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows you how people forget things, but try to make things, but things are there in history. And what Fallon's done, don't get me wrong, it is absolutely fantastic, but it's the media.
Mm.
Again, it's the media. So, you know, back then when I did it, if the media was so high, and because they open up the, you know, the room so that a lady could play in the World Championship, that's big profile anyway, because I mean, Barry and all his staff and that is taking darts on to another level, you know, which is absolutely fantastic. And really, it's opened up the media and people around to see that women can play darts.
Mm.
You know, all these years on the BBC used to be red button, if you were lucky.
Mm.
And then after a little while, if I remember right, we had a little protest because they were just going to show the ladies on the red button. And we said, we've been here all week, just like the men. We deserve airtime because we've got to pull out. They're things that people seems to, a lot of people doesn't know about. And then they all started showing the ladies live.
Mm.
Because we said, you know, we deserve to be shown. And then really, whether that's what started it, but things that were always recorded, but you could, you know, you had to dig deep. I mean, now that they've got YouTube, you can see, because it's all on there now. But yeah, you know, it's how the game is going.
Now, was the protest directed at the BBC, or was it the BDO that you had the bigger issue with?
It was both, really. I remember at Lakeside, and we were there, and I remember it was Paul and I. We just got so mad about how the ladies were treated. It's bad enough with the prize money and not giving any airtime. And that was when the LDO was formed.
Hmm.
And we had the protest, the cards, and when the camera went round. And I remember we invited Julie Lambie, you know, the LDO ladies' darts. I remember inviting Julie Lambie down, her and her husband, because obviously we needed somebody to take it up. Obviously myself, I couldn't really do it. I was pioneering it, Paul and I. And Julie came down and we chatted, and Paul, and everything formed. But to be honest with you, it never went the way how I foresee it to go. And it's a shame the ladies start to go, but that's another subject.
Were you surprised that, you know, it, from your wins at the UK Open in 2005, I think Anna's win was sort of around 2009,
2010? Yeah,
2009, 2010, yeah. To Fallon's, you know, wins 2019, were you surprised it took so long for people to really open their eyes to the ladies' game?
Well, to be honest with you, it's, again, as I said, it's the media, isn't it? It's the media that, and because the World Championship, Sky and Barry, is like a Midas. It sounds silly, but he's one of those people that whatever he puts his hand to, it kind of turned to gold.
Mm.
And giving the ladies the opportunity to play at Ali Pali really has put the ladies' game truly and highly up there on the planet.
Mm.
Because you've had other ladies who's been blazing the trail for a long time. But it's like everything, we're talking history. Mm. And then the future, we don't know what's in the future. And Fallon has set something in history now that nobody can take away from her. Because you had the other two ladies the year before who did very well. I think it was Anna and Lisa.
Mm.
And then this year it was Fallon and Mercuru.
Mm.
And because we're having more exposure on TV, that does make a difference.
Yeah.
Because you're used to TV.
Mm.
And Fallon and Mercuru playing in the World Championship with the camera and everything, you have a better way of coping with it.
Mm.
And to be honest with you, they've both played superb. And when you're playing that well, you're going to get the crowd on your side. And again, it's because they were two women.
Mm.
I didn't enjoy the booing because I thought that was wrong.
Mm.
And I will always say that is wrong. I don't care whether it's man or woman. And with the barracking that the men got, the ladies strive on it.
Mm.
Because if it was the other way around, it would have affected the ladies the same way.
Yeah.
But I think that helped them as well as they did play superb.
Mm.
To put the men under the pressure as well. So, you know, you can't take that away from them. But it's like anything, if you're in a tournament of any sort or any sport and the crowd is for you, it just lifts you. It just relaxes you and you just enjoy. Your mind is cleared, you know, because, you know, everybody is for you and you relax. I do believe that, because when I'm playing and people shouting for me and the majority is for you, you just rise.
When you went back to the BDO sort of around 2009, 2010, I know you made the final in 2012, but the real final I wanted to talk about was, you know, 2014, because you were one of the ones who'd really sort of pushed to get the ladies' final pushed to the best of five sets.
Yes.
And then you played Lisa, you were two sets up, two legs up, you know, you were in a position to throw for the match, and she ended up winning 3-2.
That one I will always remember, because simply everybody forgot that I am not that young. I was going through the change.
Mm.
And I've been going through the change for quite a while. And I've been trying natural remedies to try and combat it, because I didn't want to go on HRT.
Mm.
And at that moment, when I get the hot flush, it makes me feel sick and nausea. Mm. And it's like, you know, when you've had a good drink and next morning you think, am I going to be sick? Am I going to be... And I just thought, well, I'm winning. So, hold on. I don't need to have a break. I didn't even think of a break. I thought, I'm winning. Keep going. And then it just hit me. And I just... When I get one of those, it's like I've been set on fire. And then suddenly somebody pour water over you, and then I just go ice cold. And by the time I came round, if you know what I mean, I just lost focus. Everything just went. But nobody sees that. Nobody knows that's what's going on. And when I came off and that, I just said to Paul, I feel dreadful. Mm. And I think on the following day, I've never had such a cold in my life. It was just like everything just got knocked out of my cell, whether the adrenaline of all week and everything just, you know, it's just, I just went flat. Mm. And I had a nasty, nasty cold. But yeah, but that was what happened with me and Lisa, to be honest with you. And don't take it away, she did play. She picked up the momentum. And you got to realise sometimes when you're winning and suddenly you think, what's just happened? and your brain just starts thinking of, and you might as well forget it. And yes, I won't ever forget that.
I mean, that was obviously, you know, really the worst time really possible, because the way you were playing in the first half of that match, you looked like, you know, you'd got it sort of signed, sealed, delivered, ready to go.
Well, yeah, because I've been playing well all week, and honestly, I've not had an attack all week like that. Yes, whatever is, because it's a situation I was in playing, and the adrenaline, the tension and everything, because it's the final. Whether that brought that on as bad, I don't know. But all I know, that's what happened. That's what happened to me. But as I said, I won't ever take it away from Lisa. She played fantastic, and she saw her chance and she took it.
And I mean, sadly, a similar thing sort of happened to you in 2016 against Trina Guller as well, because you were ahead in that game, and then she pegged you back and beat you.
Yeah, you know what? For the life of me, I don't know how I lost that. I really don't know how I lost that game. It probably was never meant to be. You know, I think my world championship win is the win my World Masters, because back then they didn't have the World Championship. So I'll take that one as my World Championship. But yeah.
A link between you and Trina, in a sense, because the 97 World Cup, she got called up into the team because you weren't there. And then in 2019, because she wasn't well and had to withdraw from the World Cup, you were recalled and you got to the final of the singles in Romania.
Yes, I said that to Paul. I said, our history repeats itself. Because 1997, when Trina got called up in my place, she never looked back since then. That was the start of her career, isn't it, to where she is now. And, yeah, it was really quite strange when I said to Paul, you know, I said it's like deja vu. It's a shame I didn't win it, but...
No, I mean, you have won the World Cup before, though, back in 2013, when you beat Irina Armstrong in the final, so...
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was in Canada, wasn't it, name of the little place. Yeah, I was there with Trina. Because I won the singles, we won the pairs as well. The team game wasn't then. That was just two ladies, two you and the four men. Yeah, that was good times, yes.
And I mean, I guess, you know, it wasn't necessarily the country of your birth, but I mean, you've lived in England for decades and you've been representing the national team for decades. So I guess that was a huge moment of pride when the winning double went in to win the tournament.
Oh, God, yes, without a doubt. Because to be fair, I've lived in England more than I have in Jamaica. Because I'm now 60, 61 this year. Oh, my God, where's the time been gone? So I've been here since 1973. So yes, I've been here a lot longer, but it is my country. It's not, as you say, the country of my birth, but it is my, I don't see it as any other than my country itself, if you like, my adopted country, in I suppose I could say. Jamaica is where I was born. But my life really is in England, and it is what it is.
I guess this is obviously, you know, it's a topic that's hard to avoid in the world we live in at the moment. The topic of, you know, race and racism. Obviously, you know, growing up watching darts, it was very apparent to me that it was a very male, white male dominated sport. And you always stood out as, you know, an exceptional ladies player, but also you were sort of the only black player that I ever saw, really, on television. Did you ever experience any racism during your darting career?
Oh, God, back in the days, there was so much of it. But it was never really... They would never actually come to your face. Because one of the things I pride myself on, if I have something to say to you, I will say to you in front of you. I won't talk about you behind your back, because I just think that's cowardly. But I would always hear things said behind me while I'm playing. Especially if I'm playing a boyfriend, his girlfriend, or the husband, wife, or things like that. You know? But in saying that, I also have people who I know, if they heard it, they would tackle it. You will never, ever get away from things like that. And even as a black person or white person or whatever you want to call it, there is good and bad. And sometimes, example, I might be having a row, if you like, with, let's say, for instance, a Chinese person. And it doesn't mean that is racism, and you probably say Chinese, blah, blah, blah. But it's not meant as racism, it's just that person, you know. But of course, back then in the days, you had all those stuff on TV as well, like Love Thy Neighbours, different things and that. I mean, that was bad, you know. But you know, of course I encounter it, but then I tackle it, if that makes sense. Because I always stood up for myself, and I don't think I need to report this or report that. I deal with it. And one of my motto is, I will, if you offend me, I will let you know. But if you do it again, then I'll do something about it. But I leave you in no belief where I stand. And if I know somebody doesn't like me for whatever reason, and I will speak with them and they say, then, okay, you're entitled to your opinion as I am. And I just go about my business. As long as I'm not attacked, it's not a problem. I know it's not right, but we all deal with it in a different way. You know, I wasn't abused. They just say things, I tackle it, or my friends will tackle it. And sometimes I don't even know, I will hear it, but I never know who says it, if that makes sense. We were in Prague, and I was playing, and I remember my partner, Paul, at the time, he was fuming, and I went, what's the matter with you? After I finished it, someone in perfect English had gone, I didn't realise they could teach monkey to play darts. He didn't know who it was. But you're talking 20th century, and it still goes on. But I never heard it, but Paul did. And I've never seen him so mad. And again, nobody actually said who it was. And he couldn't turn around because he was watching me, you know? So it's things like that. But other than that, to be honest with you, they haven't abused me in any way. So face to face, if you know what I mean. So you can't turn around and say, okay, excuse me, what did you say, kind of thing. So yeah.
I mean, it's still dreadful that you've at least, you know, heard it or know of the incidents that have happened. But on a brighter note, since you went back to the BDO sort of 2009, you've won well over 100 singles titles, you know, across Europe.
Yeah.
Do they all sort of, you know, obviously the amount you've won, do they all sort of blend into one at some point, or do you, you know, remember certain tournaments vividly for certain reasons?
You know, they just all blend into one because, as I said earlier on, I just love travelling, I just love playing darts, and I would just go and I just win, and then I just go on to the next one. But there's one place that I thoroughly love going, and that is the Swiss Open. And the new ones, Prague and Hungary, they're fantastic. But the reason I say the Swiss Open, because obviously 1995, the World Cup, England went through the cards. I think it's the first time England won everything. And the Swiss Open, I think, I think it was last year, because it just would have, we would have been there back in early June. I won the Swiss Open, and it was 30 years since I won the first one, and they've got it on record. And then they put the thing up on the screen to show, I don't know, I was in the final probably about 12 times, I'm not sure. And I just sat there thinking, oh my God. 30 years after the first, and I won it since then.
Yeah.
But, you know, the anniversary was 30 years after the first one. Yeah. I mean, like the arm windmill, isn't it? That was 19 years.
I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, I know you have had a couple of breaks, but you have been playing darts, as you say, you know, over 30 years. What are the keys for you to have, you know, you've had such a long and successful career?
The key, oh my, enjoyment. I try to enjoy it as much as I can. And when I, as I say, when I go to tournaments, meeting up with new friends, having a drink. One of the things is, actually, it's weird. I don't need to drink to play. When I play darts and I drink, it's sociable. It's not about drinking. For me, it's not about I have to have a drink to play.
Mm.
Because believe it or not, last Europe Cup in Hungary, I never had an alcoholic drink while I was playing because I didn't feel great.
Mm.
The building we were in, they had these funny lights. And it made my head feel funny. I can't explain it. So I think it was the last day of it when we finished, I had a drink.
Hmm.
You know, yeah, it was weird. But yeah, I just totally, as I say, just love playing the game. And everything is just they roll into one. No, I just go play and have fun and just move on.
I mean, the last couple of years for you, you know, you've gone out in the first round of the World Championship, and I'll come on to the 2021 in a minute. But, you know, you've also been to Q School the last couple of years. What have those experiences been like? You know, so many people and, you know, the first couple of years that, you know, the ladies wouldn't be penalised for going.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I wanted the experience of playing, of actually playing darts. In that, if you like, I wouldn't say it was sterile, but you're on that hockey and it's just you and your opponent. There's no one screaming in your ears. You know, it's just you two on that hockey, and if you're not good enough, you're not good enough. And I just wanted to experience it how it is now. It's so professional. You know, it is their job. And just to see, give an order, that's just you, your opponent, and the chalker. I just loved it. I just find it so fantastic. Because when you play tournaments, obviously, you're bumping into each other, or the hockey's too narrow, people screaming for their opponent beside you, things like that, you know? Because I always say that's the difference between winning a game and losing a game. Sometimes you're just going for a double, and the next game beside you, they've just taken out a big score and they've like screamed and you missed your double, you know. So with the PDC doing Q School, it was a fantastic experience. It's just respect both players, and people just watch. You know, so I did enjoy that very much.
And to address, you know, the 2020 BDO World Championship looks as though it's going to have been the last one. There were a lot of issues with the ladies' prize fund, you know, being reduced, and I know Fallon pulled out. Was there ever any part of you that considered pulling out of the competition?
Well, yes, I did, actually. I actually said to Paul, we did discuss it, because one of the thing was as well was my walk on music. I had changed it, and I remember speaking to Des, and he went, you can't have that, that's the one we've chosen for the tournament. And I said, there's nothing in the rules says I can't have that walk on. So at that point I said to him, well, if I can't have my walk on, then I walk on to nothing. And then eventually he came back and said, oh yeah, I've chatted, blah blah blah, well, you can have that. But that was just all so, I did not enjoy that at all. And one of the reasons also I played, because L Style is one of my sponsors and 180.
Hmm.
And obviously, I have to honour, I'm under contract by them. So whether my art was in it or not, I had to go out there and play it. And I remember going to the other check with the setup and everything, and I walked on that stage and I thought, I won't say what I thought in my head, but I just thought, you know what, I don't like this at all. And when I went out to play, in myself, I just like, of course, I always want to win. Don't get me wrong. It doesn't matter whether I don't like something or not. I want to win. But it just wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
On the day when I went up there, because I prepared, although I didn't like where the venue was, is a superb venue, you know, because there's so much you could do outside if you didn't want to watch the darts or afternoon. But I prepared really well, played fantastic. And I don't know what it was on the day I walked up there and I wasn't feeling it. Wasn't feeling it at all.
Just a couple of other things. You know, in the last, you know, few years, you've been working a lot more with the youth and, you know, fundraising for young players. Is this something you've always been passionate about?
Oh, God, yes. It's always nice to bring through new talent, you know, and see how they progress. Because Fallon, believe it or not, I used to play pairs with Fallon. And we won a few tournaments and I knew the talent was there. Same as Casey. Casey Gallagher is another great little player at Oxford with us. And obviously now Bo Greaves, who is going to be, I play pairs with Bo. And I just love seeing the youngsters' face. And I just love to watch the, like, on the tens, trying to play darts and the enjoyment and the frustration and just trying to help them say how to play the professionalism of it and their parents. Well, yeah, I just love to see new talent coming through. And in any sport, you need to nurture the young ones because they're the one who's going to step into your shoes when you're no longer, you know, it's moving the game on. And yes, I do. I love doing that.
The obviously we say that, you know, the 2020 BDO World Championship, I say, looks like it's going to be the last one under the BDO umbrella. But, you know, the WDF are sort of stepping up and, you know, looking to fill that void. You are on their website listed as the athlete's presentative. So what does that, you know, what does that role involve and entail you doing?
The role is really on an outlet for the players if they want to know anything, they'll ask me, and then obviously I'll go back to all the delegates and put my point of view, ask questions, because they don't want to be here, there, and everybody doing whatever. Plus, obviously, the drugs within sports is also one of the things, as I say, the Athletes Commissioner thing to do, because we are trying to be recognised as a sport. So all the different drug listing and things like that, yeah, it's to bring it to their awareness of all these things that you can take and not take. Because as I said, we're looking to get Olympic recognition. So everyone has to have a role. So I was voted on as the Athletes Commissioner by the players when we were in Romania. Because all the head of the country and all their representatives, so all the players who were there, were put forward and they voted me as their chairperson, so I will go back to them and relay what it's all about with the Olympic drug things, and then they will relay it down to the players. So yes, it's really nothing hard.
One last thing to wrap things up. As you said before, you know, you won the Swiss Open in 1989 and you won it last year. How much longer do you intend to carry on playing darts?
As long as the body will hold out. I have noticed more aches and pains over the last couple of years. And obviously this year with the COVID-19, everything just at a standstill. So I will just keep going until I can't go anymore, I suppose. You know, so travelling-wise, you never know, I might end up just staying at home, just doing local, not local, but staying in England instead of travelling all over the world every Friday morning. But yeah, to be honest with you, I really don't know. Because we don't know after this whether my sponsors, I'll still have a sponsor, where we play, things like that, you know. It's all if and buts. Nobody really knows, so we'll see what happens in the next few months. But my personal thought is this year there won't be much. 2021 is when everything hopefully will be able to kick off, because we're talking about darts is reliant on the crowd, the amount of entries, because that's how you get your money in, isn't it? And how big a crowd will we be allowed to have? We don't know.
Well, it's a massive thank you to you for giving up so much of your time this afternoon, and you're an absolute, you know, legend of the ladies game with an incredibly lengthy career. So it's a pleasure to speak to you, Dieter.
Thank you, and you make me feel old. Okay, lovely to speak to you, Andrew.